some point, he decided that he was thinking, who can realize this truth that he has realized? Yeah. And then this thought arise in him that, if you use Singapore colloquial, it'll be, this Dharma is so cheap, who can understand? Yeah, of course, if you go and search the Pali Canon, you cannot see the word chin. If we get Singaporeans to do translation, then this is what you'll find. Yeah, this Dharma so chim and so difficult to understand. Yeah. And as this thought arises, then it is said that someone else happened to be observing. Yeah. This person, as you some of you may know, is Brahma Sahapati, one of the heavenly beings. And this heavenly being, first he observed that in this world, there was this person who has come to awakening. And then he observed this person's mind. And this person that he observed is no other than the Buddha. And so when he observed that the Buddha has this thought, yeah, this Dharma is so profound and so sublime, yeah, that it will be difficult for anyone to understand. It will indeed be weary for the Tathagata to teach, yeah, if people cannot understand. And at that moment, it is said that the Buddha was actually inclining towards entering Parinibbana. As other past Buddhas, some of them would. Those that are Pachaka Buddha, there's no condition to teach. So some of them may continue to stay on for a while, some of them may directly enter Parinibbana. And so nobody knows about them, except for other Buddhas. They know, okay, last time at this time there's this Buddha, there's this Pachaka Buddha. At that point in time there's this Pachaka Buddha. Yeah. Other than that, most of the time, nobody knows about them. But at that, for Sakyamuni Buddha, when he attained to enlightenment, and subsequently when this thought arise, someone knew. Yeah. So this someone is known in the Sutta as Brahma Sahapati. So when he realized that, what did he do? He quickly come, manifest, appear in front of the Buddha and make a request. Yeah. His request to the Buddha was out of compassion and welfare for the welfare and benefit for all sentient beings. Yeah. Please teach. Yeah. Please teach the good Dharma, for there are those with little dust in the eyes. The exact verse in Pali is today often recited, yeah, in some of the Theravada traditions, yeah, before they start the Dhamma talk. Yeah, do you all know the best? You don't know. I also don't know. Yeah, I roughly know. I know the English translation, but I never memorized the Pali. Yeah, in some traditions, yeah, it's like a practice, you know. They will memorize this verse. Much like we memorize, let's say, Namo Tassa, the Three Refuge, Five Precepts, things like that. Yeah. They memorize it because without this verse, in a way, we don't have Dhamma today, you know. Yeah. Because of this verse, yeah, repeated three times, then the Buddha reconsidered. Yeah, it is safe. And then he observed again, and then he replied, indeed, there are those with little dust in the eyes. So out of compassion, he decided to teach. Then he thought, who can understand? Perhaps the two teachers that he had learned from, yeah, the two teachers, Alara and Udaka, that he has learned from them, he learned the practice of very sublime meditation, yeah, very sublime, the formless concentration. This formless concentration is so subtle, that it trains the mind to become so quiet. Is our mind quiet?
No.
Not so quiet. I know some of your mind is very quiet. Is it very quiet? I don't have to say it. No, I think sometimes our mind is quiet. I don't say that our mind is always unquiet. Yeah? Like when you are sitting for exam, your mind is very quiet. Yeah? Your mind, when you are supposed to write answers, suddenly very quiet. You look at the question look at you, blank. Or when Sifu asks, what is this answer to the Dharma question? Suddenly our mind becomes very quiet, you know? When there's nothing going on, our mind is full of a lot of things inside. Yeah? Especially when we want to meditate. So our mind is very interesting. Yeah? When we need it to be quiet, it's not quiet. When we need it to be not quiet, to have some answers, all disappear. So next time when you want to meditate, very simple. Just imagine Sifu in front of you. Come, tell us what is the 5 aggregates, the 12 bases, the 18 elements, or immediately quiet me. Oh, you can meditate. The truth is not so easy. Not so easy to master our mind. So under these two teachers, the Buddha learned how to master the mind. Master in what sense? Master in the sense that, just like now, if I ask you to raise your left hand, raise your left hand, clench into a fist, you can do that. Then you put it down, you can put it down. You see, so easy to manage you. I just give instruction, you do. You are under my control now. Are you under my control? Let's try again. Lift up your right hand. I see lesser people raise. Put down. You see, still very easy to control. I just say a few more words, then you don't raise your hand anymore. But the truth is actually, you are still not under my control. If we say that you're under my control, it means now you try not to leave your hand. And somehow your hand. Then it means that you are under my control. Yeah? But are you under my control or under your control? Under whose control?
Our.
You don't know. Your hand under whose control? Your control or other people's control?
Our own.
Should be your control, right? But just now we talked about no self. There was a question on no self. Yeah. So under whose control? Is it my control, my decision, or other people's decision? We'll take a look again, okay? Because although on a day-to-day basis, it seems like, you know, I'm making a decision. But yet when you want to meditate, it seems like we cannot make a decision. Sometimes seems like we cannot make decisions. Yeah? If we can truly make decisions, then we can just choose enlightened. Right? If we can really make decisions and decide how our mind and body should be, then we can just say, decide enlightened. Don't wait further. Now. Decide arahanthood. So in a way we seem to be able to make decisions, but not all the time, not in all areas also. Yeah. So this kind of ability to make decision, we say, is conditional. Not that we cannot make decisions, but we can only make conditional decision, not absolute, unconditional decision. We explore this a bit more later. And because of the nature of the mind, so in order to reach a sublime state, you need to give it conditions. That's why you need to practice. If you don't need to practice, that means it's unconditioned. You can just will it to happen. That's why there's the practice of this, of that. Not just of spiritual practice, not just meditation, even worldly subject, worldly knowledge, you need condition. So when the Buddha, you see, when they're conditioned, cough. You cannot decide, I don't want to cough now. Have to. So by drinking water, it changed the condition. At least I think that the condition is because it's a bit dry. So by drinking water, if it changes, and I stop coughing, it's not that I really not to cough, you know, it's that conditions change, so stop coughing, at least for a while. But talk, then dry up, oh, cough again. Maybe. So, in this case, the Buddha, when he learned meditation under the two teachers, it was to train the mind. And when we say train, it means provide a condition, a form of conditioning for the mind. Condition the mind until it become more what? More pliant, more used to what? To quietude. And in this case, a very subtle form of quietude. So subtle that it is almost like not functioning, almost. To the untrained mind, it looks like it's dormant already. Yeah. For example, have you heard of people commenting, making comments about meditation in this way, saying, if what y'all do, meditate, just sit down there, do nothing. Right? Sometimes we hear people say that, isn't it? Yeah. Why is that the case? It is because they are not aware of the subtler state. Their mind is not so subtle, or they have not experienced a very subtle state. So to them, they can only observe very rough movement. Yeah, when you move your hand and leg, then you can see action, right? When it is just sitting down there, but they cannot see anything physical, so they feel like nothing is happening. Why? Because their mind is not subtle enough to observe the movement of the mind. So it appears like we are not doing anything. But when you meditate, are you really doing it? Nothing? Yeah, maybe some of you say, yeah, my sifu. you mean not doing nothing, man? But some people really have the wrong idea, you know. Sit down there, don't do anything. Actually, meditation is an active process. Actively observing and training the mind. In this particular instance, the Buddha was learning to train the mind such that it doesn't grasp onto the physical form. Not towards the senses, first of all, then not even to any particular form or mental concepts. To the point where the mind reached two of the higher state, base of nothingness and base of neither perception nor non-perception. But here, base of nothingness is not that you think of nothing. It's that there's a gradual process leading up to that. If you were to at least just learn in concept, you'll find that it is a very structured, very, in a way, logical process, you know. I'm very tempted to go through the whole process in detail, but we may need more than the 40 minutes we have left, and then we have 4 or 5 questions to answer. But just as a simple example, okay? Like, you are now in the auditorium, So because you can see the auditorium, can you imagine the auditorium being empty? That means nothing in the auditorium? Because you can see the auditorium, you can visualize the auditorium being empty of anything inside, right? But now if you go back home, and now I ask you, imagine LT25, being empty. Then you're like, but Sifu, what is LT25? Without giving you the boundaries, it's hard to imagine it being empty. So in the same way, the state of nothingness actually starts off with the fourth jhana, where the person is able to, in the mind, have the object of meditation cover an infinite space. By covering an infinite space, then removing that object, then you can, in a way, in your mind, conjure up the base of infinite space. Because the first level of formless state is base of infinite space. Then after that is remove that space. Focus on the consciousness that is aware of that infinite space. So then the next level is removing the space, left with only the consciousness, base of infinite consciousness. Lost already? So, something like that. But now, just now I used example of the auditorium. Now we have auditorium, easier to imagine a space like the auditorium. Similarly, for the formless state, it's built on the basis of the form concentration, where the person can conjure up in the mind or in a way expand the object until it's infinite. Yeah. Now, without going into the subtlety of it, I realize that sometimes if we just go into this, and then we start to may even wonder like, who can do this for what? It's all coming back to training the mind. Like for example, just now I asked you to raise your hand, put down your hand, very easy, right? Easy or not?
Yes.
Say yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes lah, raise hand, put down hand. But how about if in your mind, I want you to visualize a square. Can or not?
Yes.
Yeah, you say can. But if I ask you to maintain the square in an upright position, not moving, yeah, and in white color, pure white, with the boundaries of white and the background being black, yeah, with clear boundaries. Yeah. The more I clearly define it, the harder it becomes. And if I say, now I want you to define it such that you can look at each edge, and the edge is not a blur line. Yeah, very sharp, very crisp, and you can zoom in and zoom out. Yeah, and you can pan. You can go to each of the corner and look at the corner and it's perfect right angle. And anytime you want, you can move it and look at the other corner. Can or not? Maybe a bit difficult. But still you may wonder, so what is all this for? Yeah. In a way, if you look at all the different meditative practices, it is in a way conditioning the mind, training the mind. Yeah. Or a term that is maybe stronger is learning to manipulate the mind. Manipulation has a negative connotation, but the Buddha described meditation like how the blacksmith would manipulate the metal, yeah, such that it becomes malleable. Yeah, when it's not hard enough, then he'll heat it up until it's hard, until it's soft, then he can hammer, but not too soft. If it's too soft, that means it's almost like liquid, so you cannot shape it also. Then you will apply some water, and then you will hammer to shape it. This description, when you first learn it, it's like, why use this? But as you do more practice, you realize it's really something like that. In any case, the Buddha did this, but he found that this method only makes the mind very subtle, results in rebirth, doesn't help anyone. But back to the point where he has attained enlightenment, yeah, he thought, well, at least these two teachers, Alara and Udaka, if there's anyone who can understand the truth, surely they can, yeah, because their mind is so well trained already. That's the reason. Not because of these two concentration, because these two concentration didn't help the Buddha attain enlightenment. But based on that, he knows that the two teachers' mind is very well trained. So he thought, these two persons should be able to understand. But unfortunately, these two teachers have passed away. Yeah, they passed away and were reborn in the two formless concentration states already. And in these two states, because the mind is so subtle, they cannot penetrate into the truth. Yeah, the mind is almost like, you know, if you can imagine it to like a, you know, those brain scanner, is normal people is wow. Then that is flatliner. So without the ability to even do discernment, yeah, do contemplation and discernment, cannot. Yeah. So as a result, okay, too bad. Then the Buddha thought, how about the five ascetics, the five companions who were practicing extreme asceticism with the Buddha? He thought, okay, maybe they can understand. So thereafter, the Buddha went to, where did he go to? Deer Park. Where is Deer Park at? Sana? Yes, Sana? You don't know, huh? Kapilavastu, you know?
Yes.
Bodh Gaya, you know? Oh, you don't know, okay. Come to SGC, we'll cover that, okay. These are places in India, yeah. Some of the terms, some of the names haven't really changed, yeah. And some of the names got restored because of the revival, yeah. So these are actual places in India. So he went to the Deer Park, yeah. And then when he encountered the five ascetics, he gave the teaching. Much like since then, the Buddha himself gave teachings, and up till today, the monks and nuns giving teachings to both the monastics and the lay people. And here we are. Yeah, this journey isn't by chance. Not easy enough. Every year, there must be people who learn Dharma day in, day out. Then it can be sustained. Yeah. If last year, suddenly everybody decided not to learn Dharma, this year, will there be Dharma Day? Maybe not. So not easy to have Dharma Day. So oh, I was going to explain what Dharma is, then you walk out. When he go to?
Toilet.
Go toilet. In the Buddha's time, sometimes when the Buddha gave teaching, it is when people come to him. Sometimes he go out of his way to look for someone. Like there was one time, he observed that there was someone who is ready for the truth. The Buddha don't just anyhow go around, hey, lie, come and become monk. No, he observed, this person's mental faculty is ripened. This person is matured. Oh, this person is not ready yet. This person can only learn the worldly teaching. So even for Dharma, he didn't teach everyone exactly the same thing. So on that day, he went to look for the cowherd. Cowherd not around. Not go toilet. Yeah. But the cowherd lost the cow. The cow wandered off. He went spending the whole day looking for the cow. Yeah. So the Buddha waited for him to come back. Oh. Huh? You think in future you have the Buddha waiting for you? So we wait for Ash to come back. Now we talk about something else. So why did he look for this cowherd? Yeah. And at the first place, why did he teach? Yeah. If we go back again to the question, yeah, the request. For the Buddha to give teaching, it is for what purpose? In many suttas, this statement was made. If anyone were to ask you, to ask the disciple, what is the teaching about? And for what purpose is it taught? Then, roughly speaking, you should reply. In brief, it will be, the teaching is about what suffering is, what the cause of suffering is, and how to put an end to it. It is for this purpose. Of course, this is the key core, but beyond that, the Buddha also teach people how to, on top of removing suffering, but also to have whatever happiness they seek. So in a way, you can say together, it is for to help people have happiness, and to be free of suffering. Yeah. So there's this closing verse, or a verse we often recite, Sabbe Sata Sukhita Hontu. Yeah. May all beings be well and happy. Yeah. In a way, it encompasses that. Or in the Chinese translation, then we have, 愿一切众生离苦得乐. May all beings be to be happy and free of suffering. How? Is it a... No, you sit down. Later you go down, then you come up, then you wait for it. Is it a big number?
No.
Later you come in, you all don't laugh. Once a year, we celebrate Dharma Day. So the first question just now, attachment. Yeah. But we need to cover Dharma first. How? You're recording, right? Never mind, you watch later. So the word Dharma, we spell with alpha, the Roman letters. But actually, it's not English, we know. In Pali, it's D-H-A-M-M-A. In Sanskrit, it's D-H-A-R-M-A. Dharma and Dhamma. Both have the same meaning. We can say that there are three main meanings. The first meaning would be all phenomena. You know what all phenomena is? Basically all phenomena. We can say it includes all the living beings, all the non-living things, including the abstract concepts, humplum, everything. Everything included. Okay? So this is the first meaning. The second meaning, sometimes translated as teachings. In other places, translated as principles. What is the meaning of this? It refers to how all things are sustained by something, defined by something, by what? By some principles. That underneath all phenomena, there is a support. So another meaning of Dharma is support, or the principles that support this phenomena. This is the second meaning. Then the third meaning is that from all these phenomena, there are some which supports wholesomeness, give rise to wholesomeness, goodness. All the categories of phenomena that give rise to wholesomeness is taught by the Buddha. So the teachings that the Buddha has taught is also given this name, Dharma. And so we usually say Buddha Dharma, or Buddha Dharma, referring to all the wholesome teachings that the Buddha has taught. So the Buddha taught wholesome teachings for out of love and compassion for the welfare and benefit of us. So just now there was a question on attachment or non-attachment. Yes? So why is there this notion of attachment or non-attachment? A common phrase in Buddhism is let go. It's okay. Later you go back and watch. Explain your question already. Dharma. Okay? Can I? Are you satisfied?
Yeah.
No. Not satisfied also cannot be out. So is it true that when we learn Dharma, then we must let go? Actually, strictly speaking, in Buddhism, there's no must this or must that. Buddhism, in many ways, is a very free religion. You are free to do whatever you want.
Sifu, I thought just now we recite Panatipata Virama Nisikapadam Samadhiyami. Sifu, are you crazy? I thought the first precept is to abstain from killing. Now you tell us that you can do anything you want. Yeah, you can choose not to recite also. Correct or not? Are you forced to recite? Did I force you to recite? Got caught, right? Yeah, in Buddhism, you are free not to recite also, you know? Yeah. The Buddha merely said, if you kill, so far, he observed, whoever kill, at some point, this is a cause for you to suffer. When you kill, immediately you cause suffering to others, and it plants a seed for you to suffer in future. As so far as those who do not want to suffer, you should avoid killing. That's why this precept is part of the Noble Eightfold Path. This practice is for those who don't want to cause suffering and don't want suffering for themselves. Not that you cannot do it. Can. You want to kill? You can cut your problem. Next time you suffer, it's you who will experience it. Correct? Then there's a question. But you say no seva, so not me suffering, but see how everything is linked together. Yeah, but first of all, in fact, Buddhism is a very free religion. Yeah. So when some students tell me that they are free thinkers and they look at me, they are expecting me to have something to say. I say, yeah, good. We are also free thinkers. Uh-huh. Yeah. We are free to think whatever we want. Yeah. In fact, you are encouraged to think. If you don't think, you don't question, you cannot become enlightened. Yeah. You cannot simply accept Dharma and expect yourself to, you know, out of faith or just accepting like that, and then you become enlightened. Difficult, just simply blind faith. Cannot. Yeah. So then the question, first of all, the attachment. Yeah. Does it mean that we cannot be attached to things? Yeah. So similarly, you can. The Buddha merely observed that he who so get attached to something will suffer because of that thing. So the Buddha, in a way, he never tell people you cannot be attached, no. He's merely telling you attachment leads to suffering. You decide, Lord, you want suffering or not. You know what I mean? So her question was actually more about how it seems like, correct me if I understand your question correctly or wrongly. It seems like when people learn more Dharma, then they seem to become more particular about things, you know. Yeah, that's the context, right? Become like that cannot, like this cannot. You come here, must pray like that, must chant like this, must put the candle like this, like the angle. Suddenly becomes very particular, isn't it? Yeah. So does it mean that we should or shouldn't? Like today, you see, we put the candle, then we put the name there. Should we put it there or not put it there? Then just now when you all bow, did you all bow in the same way? Which way is the correct way? Is there a correct way to bow? Yeah. Actually, just now when I asked those who came in and has not bowed to bow, I thought it was a very beautiful sight. Yeah. Each person expressing veneration towards the awakened one in the way that they find suitable. Because in a sense, if you look at the sutta, in the Buddha's time, that's what happened. Different people will come in at different time and pay respect to the Buddha in different ways. Some of them come in and then just knock their head. Some of them just acknowledge the Buddha. Some of them will come in, I so and so, from this and that clan. Yeah. Like for example, if it's a Singapore Chinese, it will come in, I so and so, from the house of the Twin Woods. You know, Twin Woods, you know, like Twin Woods, Lin Mei, San Lin Mei, Swang Mu Ling, you know. Then you declare your family name, then your clan name, then okay, then you sit down. Or you declare your personal name, then you sit down. Yeah. So in a sense, in the Buddha's time, there's very little requirement for things to be this way or that way. Yeah. But does it mean that Buddhism is a religion where anything goes? Not really also. Because the Buddha did observe that killing leads to suffering. Yeah. We say that just now, impossible, just now, your words are roti plata, no. Peng lai, peng, peng lai, peng, like this, can like that, can like that, then suddenly cannot, right? Yeah. Because the truth is, yeah, I did say, your choice. Yeah. But your choice doesn't mean that the Buddha didn't say list out this criteria. The Buddha did say, if you want happiness, you want to be free of suffering, you would want to avoid and abstain from killing. The Buddha did say that, ma. You cannot later say, no lah, anything goes. Cannot. In particular, one precept that I'm very fond of is the precept on alcohol. Yeah. Because a lot of people always have issue with that. Yeah. Other precepts, we may have difficulty, but hard for us to justify it, you know, stealing lah, hard to justify. But maybe there's a four precept, sometimes contentious. Yeah, fifth precept is most interesting because people always say, hey, but Sifu, some other place, they say okay. Yeah, the precept on alcohol, they say, as long as you don't get drunk, it's okay. Yeah. Yeah, then when some other people say, cannot, then there are some people who say, hey, why are you so attached? Don't be so attached, ma. But this is where I say, no, you cannot twist what the Buddha said. Because the Buddha did say to abstain from this. If we personally cannot observe it, that's our own problem. We shouldn't be creative and then twist it around. Yeah, or take the Buddha's teaching on non-attachment and say, hey, don't be so attached to precepts. No, cannot. That's not how you apply attachment or non-attachment. Sometimes students also ask me, Sifu, we're supposed to be non-attached, right? So why are some people so attached to Dharma? Do you realize? Huh? Sometimes students may ask the question, why are people so attached to Dharma? You understand what I'm saying? Yeah? So, of all the things in this world, Buddha Dharma is the last thing you have to be concerned about attachment. Yeah, the first thing we should work on when it comes to learning Dharma is to ask yourself, where does our suffering lies in? Unless you're telling me at this point in time, you're directly suffering due to Dharma. Any of you? Any of you suffering due to Dharma? Huh? Really? Some of you suffering due to Dharma? No, right? So, I want you all for today's talk, to take something back also. Okay? So I want you to take out your handphone, because I don't think you brought writing material. If you brought writing material, you can use the writing material. If you didn't, take out your handphone and write down three things that maybe upset you. Yeah, for those who have been attending my class, you'll be like, ayo, same exercise again. Yeah, because you're not enlightened yet, Masu. If you're enlightened, then we do a different exercise. La. Those who are enlightened after class, see me. I give you a different exercise, okay? But if you're not enlightened yet, still, that's why I do the same one. It's just like, if you never pass PSLE, so you must retake law, you retake until you pass law. Okay, so very quickly, right now, three things that still upset you. And please don't write down Dharma upset you. I give you 1 minute to write, okay? 1 minute. Very quickly. Seconds left. Give you some pressure. Wow, so pressure, one of them left. Maybe go toilet also. You see, this is the problem with having a human rebirth. Yeah? Every few minutes need to go toilet. Otherwise hungry, 20 seconds left. Yeah. Otherwise tired, need to sleep. Otherwise mind unsettled, 10 seconds left. Now imagine if you only have 1 minute to attain enlightenment. 3, 2, 1, stop. Wow. So exciting, you see? Dharma, learning Dharma can be exciting. Why write down these three things? So you write down three things, yeah, and this is where you start. If you want to use the Dharma to help us, you must start off with where you are, yeah, which is our current state, where maybe sometimes you get a bit frustrated with some things, some people make you a bit upset, or some circumstances make you feel anxious, fearful, and so on. Now, this is where you need to start. So then, where does the attachment teaching come in? How about the teaching on no self? Yeah. We say no self, no self. Yeah? But if no self, then who is receiving the consequences? So the first thing about no self spending multiple life, right, is instead of looking at multiple life, first look at this life. Okay, first look at this life. So consider this. From the start of the talk until now, are you the same?
No.
Are you the same person? By right, it shouldn't be the same person. If it's the same person, you have wasted your time of 45 minutes so far. Yeah. I have not wasted my time, but you would have wasted your time. So by right, after 45 minutes, there should be a change. Yeah, as to what change that is, that's a different question. Whatever change there is about what has transpired. Yeah, how much have you learned? How much different concepts have you realized? Yeah, or reinforced? Yes? So, meaning that from the start of the talk until now, you are a different person. Yes? So, your decision to come to this today's talk is... Was it made at 3 o'clock? No, right? You may have heard of the talk maybe 1 day ago, 3 days ago, or 1 week ago. And then you decide to come. So that decision caused you to arrive here today, plus your effort in between. Yeah? And then it results in some maybe question mark, some realization, some new understanding perhaps. So, and yet this person now is different from, definitely different from the person who made the decision, is it? And yet, that decision is affecting this person now. Would you agree? Do you see the link? Well, it's a different person, so you cannot say it's the same person. Of course, a different person is not the same person. But seems like it's the same person in a way or so on. Yeah? So same, same, yet different. Yeah, same, same, yet different. And because of this same, same, yet different relationship, the past, in a way, we say, the past conditions the future. Conditions the arising of a future being that is not totally disconnected, and yet not exactly the same. That's why I say same, same, yet different. Same, same, yet different. So in that sense, the past karma of that decision. Karma means action. Yeah, karma means action, not result. The action or the decision to come for the talk, plus the follow-up, results in this experience that is now affecting you, and may continue to affect you depending on how long you remember about the talk and how strong the impact is. And whether you follow up with this realization or new understanding. So if you can appreciate the interconnected relation for this time span, then perhaps it's easier to understand how our karma can condition future arising, even though it's not exactly the same and yet not disconnected. So no self, attachment. In the teaching, in the Dharma, the Buddha covered a lot of topics. Yeah. Just now I mentioned about how he observed that he who wants to have happiness should avoid killing. Yeah. In Buddhism, the precept is not set down as a rule It's not a decision that the Buddha just made on his own, you know. It is based on his observation. Yeah. So in a way we can say that he observed the pattern. Yeah. So if I dare say so, the word Dharma also refers to patterns. Yeah. Principles is a form of patterns. The pattern that whenever you do harmful things, painful results will arise. Can I understand? So one part of the pattern or Dharma that he teach
is the pattern of how there is causality. Yeah? And from this causality, he derived the ethics, yeah, the morality, we call sila. Yeah? Sila is actually behavior. And the kind of behavior that is conducive towards happiness, that is what you should apply yourself towards. The kind of behavior that results in pain, that is what you should avoid. Can I understand so far? And then, among all the different patterns he observed, he also observed that while we all seem to be very different, are you all the same? Similar? In a way, we are the same, but yet in a way, we are different. How many of you are women? Raise your hand. Some of you guys want to raise your hand also. How many of you are men? So, can you say that two groups of people raise their hands? So if you go by gender, then we are different. Yes? How many of you are human beings? Raise your hand. Don't laugh, raise, really raise. I see some of you all never raise, so some are not human beings. No, actually all human beings, but some are sleeping. That's why they never raise. Don't disturb their sleep. But disturb him a bit. Otherwise, he nudge him a bit. Yeah. Hello. Yeah. Are you okay? Yeah. Sit upright. Sit upright a bit. I share with you a very powerful tip, how to stay awake during Dharma talk. Because actually it's not your problem, it's because of Sifu's voice. A lot of students tell me that my voice is so very soothing, you know. So if you keep on hearing that, after a while not a problem. So among all the patterns, although we are different, but same also. Same in what sense? Are you all human beings?
Yes.
But then the Dharma is not just for human beings. There are human beings, there are heavenly beings, there are asuras, hell beings, there are ghosts, there are animals. Yeah. So in a way we are still different. Yeah. But among all the different phenomena, yeah, how about you are human being? Then how about that table and you, are you all the same?
Yes.
Yes. In a way, he's correct, no? But in what way are we the same?
We are all an object.
We are all an object.
We are all on this earth.
No, you are object or no object. No. I think what he's trying to say is that although we are different, but we have physicality also. So in a sense, we are similar. That's physicality. Yeah? But the very interesting thing that the Buddha observed is that despite the great range of differences, there's some underlying principles that is similar. And he observed, then he bring it up in the teachings, and it's called the three universal characteristics. It's known as universal because it spans all phenomena. Yeah, but some of the characteristics is not so universal also. It's universal as far as conditioned phenomena is concerned. Yeah, the first one is sabbe sankara anicchati. Yeah, that all conditioned phenomena, all fabricated things, is impermanent. Yeah, understand? Yeah. So fabricated things are impermanent. That's the first universal characteristics that underlies all things compounded. Are you compounded? Say yes. Yeah. Actually, we are compounded. Although every day when we wake up, we feel like only one I, ma. But actually, this so-called I comprises a lot of things put together. Through a collection of conditions. The table is also similar to us in that sense. It's also compounded. And what the Buddha observed is, there is nothing that is compounded that is eternal and permanent. No such a thing that exists. Yeah. So So that's the first universal characteristic. Second is that that which is impermanent and changing, yeah, is subject to suffering. Subject to suffering. This part maybe need a bit of explanation. So follow me. I ask you a simple question, you give me direct answer. Don't think Abhidhamma, don't think, wow, this one very cheap question, must give a wow, master's degree kind of answer, okay? Just give me the most direct question answer. So question, that which is impermanent, is it subject to change? Will it change, in other words?
Yes.
Yeah, very simple, straightforward. This. Second, is something that is impermanent subject to change? This subject to change, when something change, is it due to conditions or due to your decision?
Conditions.
And this is the other feature of this anicca. When we say anicca, it's not just impermanence. It is that this change changes due to conditions. Not due to our whims and fancy, you know. Because if it's due to our whims and fancy, we can decide for it to change or not to change. But are we really in such control? No. So then, this manner of changing, yeah, is it conducive for stability or instability?
Instability.
Instability. Because you cannot control it, ma. Yeah. And such change that is unstable, yeah, is it more certain or less certain?
Certain.
Less certain is it, isn't it? Yeah, it's uncertain because you cannot determine it. And finally, I ask you, this kind of change that is unstable, uncertain, not within your control, yeah, does it cause you to feel more at ease or less at ease?
Less
at ease. And hence, in this way, is it conducive for your happiness? By the sutta is straight away. Yeah. Something that is impermanent, subject to change, is it subject to suffering? Wow, the monks at that point in time immediately just answer, subject to suffering. Yeah. When we learn it, we just memorize, okay, subject to suffering. But sometimes we may think, sometimes we also don't think why. So this is one way to help you to reflect and understand, oh, this is why. But you need to go through a few more times to be sure, you know. You must go and reflect on it to be sure. Yeah. Because this is my reflection I'm sharing with you. But you must go and observe and reflect, until you are quite certain that all kinds of changes is indeed not conducive for happiness. Even the one that you seem to be able to control, is not, you know. Because in fact, the one that you seem to be able to control is the one that really lead you to suffering. Because it gives you a false sense of control. Make you lull you into a false sense of security, of certainty. But in fact, even when you seem to be in control, you are still not in control. And this leads us to the third characteristic. Sabbe dharma anattati. Yeah, that all phenomena, whatsoever, all are without self. Coming square one to the question. There are no self. And this is about how in the sutta, the Buddha will ask, that which is impermanent, subject to change, subject to suffering, is this fit for you to be considered mine, me, or myself? Very interesting, huh? In the Buddha's time, sometimes he will just declare the three characteristics as it is. Many times you will ask it in a series of questions. Yeah. For people to go and figure out themselves, to reflect and to observe and to come to the conclusion themselves. Yeah, he don't force feed you no self, no self. You say got self, force it, pia, 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 pia. Self enough, no self, pia, pia. No, not like that. But he will ask the monks. Yeah. He will ask the disciples. You go and think about it, is it fit for you? That means, in other words, if something is impermanent, subject to change, and the change is without your control, then can you still that say that it belongs to you, that is mine? Or can you say that that is who you are? If it's who you are, you should be able to control that. If it's due to, if it changes due to other conditions, then you're not in control. Then how can you say that that is you? Or for that matter, your very essence, yourself, your atta, your atman. Yeah. So when we look at the sutta, this is the angle. Yeah. It's not an indoctrination. Instead, it is a series of questions and answers, where the Buddha, through his questions, is inviting people to think for themselves. Yeah, to think for themselves. And this tradition of inviting people to come and think for themselves, to observe for himself, ehi pasiko, yeah, continues up to this very day. And will continue until one day this tradition is gone, when people stop wanting to think for themselves. Yeah. Or forgot how to think already. Yeah. So this process, an invitation, started 2600 over years ago, with the Buddha realizing for himself the truth underlying our existence. And how, if we don't see it, either we don't see it, or we see a bit of it but struggle against it, and as a result we suffer. Or because we don't see it, so our expectation and reality is always in contention. If there's one thing I realize about reality, is this. Reality doesn't care about us. You look shocked, huh? But yeah, reality don't care about you. Reality is the way it is. Reality referring to how things are. It doesn't care about you. It doesn't care about how you think, how you perceive it. It doesn't give a hoot about your opinion. Reality is also not a democratic process. It doesn't care whether how many of you agree or disagree with it. When conditions are right, it's going to change, it's going to change. It doesn't matter how many of you will cry or suffer, it's going to change. Yeah? Like today, we want to have a talk. If let's say today, after this, we say, let's go out for an outing. Wow, sunny day. Then you feel, wow, today's weather is good. Then you feel like, wow, things are going your way, isn't it? But actually, even when the sun is up, it is not trying to make you happy, you know. And then sometimes maybe you want to go out for a walk, then it rains. When there are conditions, it rains. It's not trying to stop you from walking, you know. And when it is very sunny, it's not trying to torture you also, you know. Yeah, it is just the way it is. What the Buddha observe is, reality is just the way it is. It functions in the natural order, yeah, that he observed and he shared, so that what? So that if our realization or appreciation of reality becomes closer and closer and closer in line with reality, then our expectation of it will become closer as well. And as a result, our disparity, our disappointment may become lesser and lesser until one day there's no more disappointment. In a way, all our Dhamma learning and practice is about this, closing this gap, closing this gap. So go back to the three things you wrote down. Take a look at them and ask yourself, in what way is it due to a disparity between what we know about reality, yeah, and in what way can you change that? Chances are you'll see that the further away you are from reality, the larger the disappointment, the larger the agitation in the mind. Some people suggest that, Sifu, very simple, just have no expectation. Isn't it? And some people say that. Actually, in Buddhism, it is not that, you know. We're not asking people to have no expectation. What the Buddha observed and what we can glean from it is to have the right expectation. Expect things to change when there are conditions for it to change. Expect things not to change when conditions have not changed. Expect that things are the way they are. Expect that when there are conditions, you can effect change. When there are no conditions, you cry also never change. Yeah. And if you can follow this path to the end, yeah, you will realize the truth of reality the way the Buddha and the Arahants realized. And you'll know it for yourself. Yeah. Ehi Pasiko. Happy Dhamma Day. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's do a dedication. With the merits of today's sharing.
With the merits of today's sharing.
May all beings be well and happy.
May all beings be well and happy.
May all be free from ill will.
May all be free from ill will.
May all be free from anger.
May all be free from anger.
May all be free from pain.
May all be free from pain.
May all be free from suffering.
May all be free from suffering.
May all abide in peace.
May all abide in peace.
Abiding in peace.
Abiding in peace.
May all develop tranquility.
May all develop tranquility.
Developing tranquility.
Developing tranquility.
May all develop wisdom.
May all develop wisdom.
Developing wisdom.
Developing wisdom.
May all attain final liberation.
May all attain final liberation.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's pay respect to the Buddha.